and Elena Bostrus versus Walmart Inc. Mr. Taherzad?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
You're first.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mo Taherzada for the appellants and plaintiffs. This is a summary judgment case from the Southern District of Texas. Interestingly, like most diversity cases, the state law is sort of settled. The issue is the application of Rule 56 in this case. I would urge the court to review the memorandum, the magistrate's memorandum, and the district court's adoption of that memorandum, and the district court's denial of our motion for summary judgment. Candidly, you will not see one sentence in those opinions that follow Anderson, Matsushita, Celotex. There's not one observation that a single fact in this difficult case for the plaintiffs, no doubt, you will not see one fact in that order, in those orders, that an inference was taken in favor of the plaintiffs or that any fact was considered in their favor. Rule 56, as the court knows, is like Rule 50. Most experienced trial lawyers know this. Rule 50 and Rule 56 are very similar, with the exception that under Celotex, the quality of the evidence does not have to be in the admissible form that it is at trial. So the scope of the evidence might be the same, but the quality is different. But the court must...
We're bound by Rule 56, too, aren't we, counsel?
I'm sorry, yes, Your Honor?
We're bound by Rule 56?
Yes, Your Honor.
In reviewing it?
That's correct. And under Rule 56, Your Honor, the court was to weigh all the evidence in our favor and make inferences, reasonable inferences, not unreasonable inferences. And what I would urge the court to do, when I look at the court's opinion below, as the court knows, the court, for example, observed, this is record site 835, based on the video evidence, the uncontroverted deposition testimony, the police camera footage, and the itemized list of stolen items, Walmart employees Dela Cruz and Rock had a reasonable suspicion that plaintiffs were attempting to steal property. Your Honor, candidly, that's a factual finding. That is not a summary judgment analysis. The court goes on, whether or not Hinn was actually attempting to steal merchandise is not determinative. I don't know what that means, but it certainly does not mean that the facts are taken in our favor. And what are those facts? Walmart says an employee, under the shopkeeper's privilege, an employee saw the video and saw Ms. Hinn steal or put the stuff in her purse. The video is not available. He said the video was available at his deposition. The video is not available. The police asked him, where is the video? We need that video. I've cited to the portion of the video where the policeman asks Mr. Rock and Mr. Dela Cruz. And full disclosure, Your Honor, look at the expression on their face. They are nervous. Those are the kinds of facts that a jury should decide whether Walmart's actions were reasonable or not. The district court, the magistrate judge, without any citation, agreed with Walmart that its policies do not matter, that its training does not matter. That is not the law. The Texas Supreme Court, they take a particular sentence out of context. It's dicta, candidly, out of Resendez. But in many other cases, including from the Southern District, from the Eastern District, the Western District, in the Reyes versus Dollar Tree case, the district court goes into a number of analysis saying how that is, of course, matters. Did the Walmart employee follow procedure? Did he know what he was doing? We cannot assess reasonableness without considering who the retailer is. This is Walmart. Many of the cases we're looking at involve Walmart because Walmart has defined policies to prevent the kind of thing that happened in this case. A alleged shoplifting turned into an absolute, well, the videos speak for themselves. It's a mess. It's a mess, and no one should be proud of it. But the important thing, the district court did not care. I apologize. The district court did not consider that policies, that Walmart's policies matter. And how do we know that? Mr. De La Cruz. Interestingly, Mr. Rock, the man who took the plaintiffs with force, we don't have an affidavit from him. We don't have a deposition from him. So all we're going on is what Mr. De La Cruz tells us. Mr. De La Cruz himself testified at his deposition, it's in the record, that what Mr. Rock did was improper, that he should not have grabbed them, that he should not have used force.
He didn't do anything with regard to the daughter, I guess, Ms. Bustos, did he?
He did not, Your Honor.
She followed him back in.
She followed him. Your Honor, she's a minor. And the district court or the magistrate paid no attention to that. The courts and we...
How does that matter?
The Texas courts have said, Your Honor, in determining false imprisonment, you must take into all considerations. Let's say she was 16 years and 11 months, whatever the statute is. I'm sorry, I've cited it. But would it matter if she was 5 years old or if she was 6 years old? Would she be really free to go out? It doesn't matter. And the district court and the magistrate did not consider that. False imprisonment considers a totality of the circumstances. We've cited the case on that. And it says, look at the size of the gentleman. In fact, Mr. De La Cruz himself testifies. Contrary to their brief, Mr. De La Cruz says, yes, Tyrone's a big man, and she was a petite woman. The district court completely disregarded a case on point, a case she cited, where grabbing of a purse is considered assault. In this case, the district court and the magistrate made a distinction that grabbing the purse doesn't matter. The law is, the Walmart versus Odom case is right on point. In fact, the case says, in that case, the employee grabbed the arm. The court says, but because the purse was involved, even if he had only grabbed the purse, the employee, that would have been an assault. The district court says just the opposite, that it doesn't matter. Your Honor, if I may inject a little personal, I've been married almost 20 years. If last week, if I go into my wife's purse to move the car in front of the house, she says, what are you doing in my purse? Those are the kinds of reasonable inferences that courts must take, and it did not happen in this case. They say that he saw her, go through the men's department and grab a whole bunch of infants. The only document we have, which they submitted on a reply, has five items. Three or four of them are men's items. There's only one bib. These are the kinds of discrepancies that entitle us to go to trial. Foreseeability, I think, is also important because I think both the parties, candidly, also get mired into this notion of whether the officer is a public or private, and I think we have the better argument. I think all the cases they cite say it's a case-by-case analysis and it's a fact question on a close call like this, or generally in close calls. But more importantly, I think from our perspective, is the foreseeability. The policies that Walmart has, and they're in the record, is to prevent this from happening. That's foreseeability. Once he violated the shopkeeper's privilege, once he assaulted them in false imprisonment, everything that follows is connected to that wrongful action. It doesn't really matter that the police officer, the off-duty officer, eventually took his actions as a public servant or a private servant. I think we are entitled to a jury trial even on that issue.
But the officer wasn't acting on the behalf of Walmart when he put the plaintiffs in handcuffs, when he subdued them.
I think, Your Honor.
He was in uniform.
At the moment, yes, they did not know that. At the moment,
he was in uniform. You can see the badge in the video.
Your Honor, but we're looking at it from there, from the perspective, two points on this. If that were the standard, then none of these cases should at all have, we should not be reading any cases about this distinction.
Well, but the point is, he saw a crime and went at that point to defuse it.
Judge Wilson, respectfully.
But the crime wasn't shoplifting at that point. What he saw was an assault of the Walmart employees by the plaintiffs.
Your Honor, well, here's the factual. That to me sounds like a factual determination. He comes.
How's it a factual determination when it's right there in the video? What fact do you have, competent summary judgment evidence, to counteract that fact?
When he comes, the testimony is by a couple of their witnesses, the Walmart employees, that he is following a manager with a cart. I think they're moving money around or something. And he sees a scuffle. One, there is nothing in the record that shows he knows who Rock is. Nothing in the record. He sees a scuffle, and he intervenes. But how is that different than, Your Honor, any security guard? If a security guard is working at Walmart or Target and they see a scuffle, don't they get involved?
Well, but this is an off-duty policeman, and the law says that he becomes an on-duty policeman once he goes in to see, he witnesses a crime.
I think the case...
He doesn't have to know who Rock is.
I think that the issue is, and one of the cases they cite is Mansfield. In Mansfield versus the city of, I believe, Austin. In that case, the court cites a number of cases because of this question. And what the court said, there's a ton of cases that say it's not so straight, clear cut, even in the case of a police officer. And the issue is, and a lot of those cases, Your Honor, if the police officer had on his own approached them, let us step back. If the police officer, if he had called Mr. McNeil, and Mr. McNeil had engaged the employees, the appellants, I think we would have a markedly different case. Because in a lot of these cases, the officer is taking the first step as a police officer. In this case, he is retained by them as a security guard. That should not be disputed. That is a fact. And what I'm saying is, if it's so clear cut that as an off-duty police officer, if everything he does to maintain the peace, to stop shoplifting, trespassers, which is against the law as well, and the cases Mansfield cites, if that were the case, I think we would have a different area of law.
Well, yes, but that premise, it doesn't have to be the case. The only case here is that the officer off duty witnessed a crime. He witnessed an assault. And at that point, I think the law, tell me if I'm wrong, says if he goes in to try to defuse the situation, subdue the suspect, whatever it may be, he becomes an on duty officer.
I think you stated the law correctly, Your Honor. The factual component of that issue is, when does that start? Would we all agree that if he was just off-duty security guard, like, forget that he's a police officer. Well, let's not forget, he is important. As a security guard, he had taken any action in any of these cases that we've cited and that Mansfield cites, why is it even a question? This area of law should be definitively set forth that if a police or off-duty police officer takes any action to abide by the to apply their laws, there is no question. They get immunity. But that's not the case, because I think we have to look at the fact pattern. I think foreseeability, this is a difficult question, Your Honor, but I don't think the court has to answer it. I think foreseeability answers our question. Once Rock and once Walmart violated and falsely assaulted them, I think everything that follows should be ascribed to what Walmart did improperly.
Okay, counsel, in the time you have left, I want to make sure what your position is on the question of whether we have enough before us to determine jurisdiction. This is really a question more for Walmart, but I want to know what your position is on that.
Your Honor, full disclosure, obviously I did not argue too hard on that. They say that the one entity, which is, I think, the
one. I'm not worried so much about what their citizenship is. Is it an issue you accept that we can resolve, or is this something that needs to be remanded to the district court to resolve? Do we have enough in the record? So I'm not worried about you telling me what their citizenship is, but how can we rule on this here?
I think so, Your Honor. The statute that they have cited, it's
1863.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. I think there is sufficient for the court to be able to decide that issue. I do, Your Honor. Obviously, the court could also remand it to the district court, but based on their representations and when I take them at face value, I think either way, I think the court can, if they have to file something more proper, but either way, I think so. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hoffman?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Neil Hoffman. I'm here for Walmart. We believe the district court correctly decided this case on the summary judgment standard and correctly granted the 12B6 motion that we're dealing with. From the summary judgment...
Let me start with jurisdiction.
Okay, Your Honor. As we...
My question is, the division, I wouldn't say our law is all that clear. The division that is sometimes applied in this court is whether there is evidence in the record to support what the citizenship is. And not just whether it's conceded by everybody, though in some circumstances, just concessions by the party has been enough. So tell me, what is in the record? One recent approach we have taken is just allowed an amended complaint to be filed here. So how does our options fit with what we now have before us?
Yes, Your Honor. So in our notice of removal, Walmart laid out the chain, as it were, of citizenship. So we start with Walmart Stores Texas LLC and Walmart Inc. Walmart Inc., as we noted in that in the removal, is a citizen of Arkansas or Delaware and Arkansas.
I'm not trying to slow us down on the individual facts. I mean, you set it out in your brief, and there are several steps that we need to go. I don't want you to go through those steps here. That's not in the notice of removal. All the details that are necessary. Would you accept that?
I think it's less clear than it could have been. I think from our record citations, we believe that the notations are sufficient for what we need because the furthest we really go is to the Walmart Property Co. Corporation, which is the citizen. It's the corporate citizen with its principal place of business in Arkansas and Delaware. The courts have noted that kind of stops the inquiry there because then we have no more kind of member inquiries where we get further down the chain.
If you looked at our case law just at all, what do you think fits our situation best?
I think when we're looking at this sort of thing, I think the Gray Wolf case kind of lays out as far as removal, you know, as far as pleading this. This wasn't a situation where the plaintiffs even actually contested it to where we had to go back and file additional or more substantive documentation. And so if the court thinks we need to do that, we would simply ask the court to allow us to replete it under 28 U.S.C. 1653 here, because really all we would be doing is going back to the lower court, reaffirming everything that's already happened and coming right back here. That seems to be the most efficient way to do it. If the court feels like we need actual documentation, we can get an affidavit from a Walmart corporate individual laying out the chain. We can get documentation. But we believe it's very clear that we are citizens of Delaware, of Arkansas, but not of Texas.
All right, Kelsey, you can move back to...
So from the summary judgment side of things, Your Honor, we're kind of looking at kind of a hybrid approach here because we have video here and we believe the video does impact how we need to assess the evidence. The appellants have suggested there's not any facts actually offered by the court on some of these issues, and the reason that he may be confused on it is because the appellants really didn't offer much in the way of any facts on any of these issues. When we're assessing the video, we've cited Scott v. Harris to explain why we think the court should be looking at that video and some of the facts related to that video in the light based on that video. And really, the appellant's response is twofold. First, they have said, well, we just don't think the court should use Scott v. Harris because it should only apply to excessive force claims. Respectfully, we disagree. This court has already applied it in multiple cases that aren't that, including two involving Walmart. So that we can easily toss aside. The second part is, well, we just don't think that the way it was viewed is appropriate. And so when we're looking at this video, we kind of look at a couple threshold issues. Were there objections to authenticity of video? Were there objections to the admissibility of the video? No, none of those. We check those boxes. We can look at some of this court's guidance, for example, in Darden v. City of Fort Worth. Are we getting a clear view of what the video shows? Is it a continuous picture of what's happening? So in Darden, for example, it was an excessive force claim where the officers were alleged to have used a body slam maneuver and then an unreasonable restraint. Darden said, of course, you did violate my rights. The city said, no, look at the video. And the video really just kind of cut in and out. The officers shifted their bodies. We couldn't actually see what was happening. And this court said, well, we can't use the video in that way. We have to look at Darden's other fact witnesses, and there's a fact issue. Similarly, when we have consistent video, we can ask, does that video and what it shows, is it consistent with what the story the plaintiffs are telling it for the purpose it's offered? An example for this case would be Aguilar v. United States, which dealt again with an excessive force claim where the officers used a body slam maneuver, and they claimed they had to do it because the suspect was resisting.
Counsel, what do you do with the Odom case? I mean, here it seems to me that the video's clear, full color, and the question really comes down to whether, I can't remember which offhand, but when the Walmart personnel, you know, went in front of her buggy and then pulled her by her purse, she wouldn't let go of it, but pulled her back into the store. I mean, is that an assault? Is that battery? Is it enough of a question to take Walmart's personnel out of the shopkeeper's privilege?
We'd say no, Your Honor.
Why so? Tell me what you do with Odom.
Well, first, it's important to note, the plaintiff never actually raised any issue with Odom at any time in this case, up until their reply brief here. They never argued to the district court, for example, well, Odom says you can't use the privilege in this way. They never contested the use of the privilege in this manner. Even if we were to look at that issue, though, in Odom, what happened is kind of a two-part inquiry, reasonable belief inquiry, reasonable manner inquiry. And the court said under either framework, this isn't an appropriate shopkeeper's privilege situation. For reasonable manner, as Your Honor pointed out, Judge Wilson, what happened in Odom is the store associate sees the plaintiff walking out of the store and just grabs her. No conversation, no communication, no nothing. Just grabs her because she thinks this person might be doing something wrong. That's what Odom is. And the court said, first, you don't even have a reasonable belief that this person was doing anything. But even if we look past that, what you did to do this, just grabbing someone, isn't appropriate. In this case, by contrast, Mr. Rock has been alerted to all of the information about why this is a suspicious situation, because Mr. Dela Cruz told him. There's been no objection to that evidence in the record. So when Mr. Rock goes and stops Ms. Hun, he already is doing so with the knowledge of what has happened. Then he doesn't immediately grab her. He goes in front of her cart to stop her movement and tries to identify himself and explain what is happening. Ms. Hun admits Mr. Rock's talking to her. I'm just not listening to what he has to say. Then she tries to walk past him. And only then, first Mr. Rock shifts to try to block her movement. And then when she continues to try to get past, only then does he take hold of the strap of her purse. And frankly, Your Honor, the plaintiffs haven't really identified any explanation for why that is an unreasonable manner of detention, why it's a fact issue on an unreasonable manner. As the district court noted, there's literally nothing else Mr. Rock could have done in this situation short of what he's already tried to do. And they haven't even identified anything else he could have done that would be less intrusive as far as doing what he's trying to do to investigate the issue of shoplifting. A case that'd be instructive, Your Honors, is one out of the Houston Court of Appeals. It's the Carr case, I believe. I'm sorry, Henry, Your Honors. And in that case, what occurred is a kind of straightforward situation where the Henry goes into a JCPenney store. He's wearing a jacket. He sees a sweater on a rack that he wants to try on, so he takes his jacket and puts it on a different rack with similar-looking jackets. Tries on the sweater. I don't like it. Puts his jacket back and leaves the store. And an associate who comes by and sees him grab the jacket off the shelf and leave stops him for shoplifting. The officers who are summoned to come with them take hold of Mr. Henry and move him to the back of the store to look into this issue. They take hold of his arm, one holds his collar. The Court of Appeals explains the only physical contact was for the purpose of directing Henry back into the store and keeping him from leaving. As a matter of law, that manner of detention was reasonable. The same sort of thing here. Mr. Rock is just trying to keep hold of the purse, which contains the items, to keep Ms. Hun from leaving because she's already tried to get away after Rock told her why he's stopping her. But if we looked at the other two components of this, the reasonable belief and reasonable time elements, these, again, are fairly straightforward. Appellant's counsel kind of suggests, well, I don't understand this standard. Why does it matter if she's actually stealing or not? And it's a pretty easy explanation. It's a subjective determination of the evidence based on what the store, what the people making the detention believe under those facts. The appellants really haven't contested the factual rationale for why this stop happened. They didn't offer any evidence in the summary judgment record that the belief Mr. Dela Cruz and Mr. Rock had was an unreasonable one, and that's why there's no fact issue. So we can look at a couple of examples of cases where a reasonable belief is present and where an unreasonable belief is. In Odom, for example, that's an unreasonable belief because the associate who made the stop didn't see the plaintiffs in the store, didn't see them anywhere near the items that they supposedly took, and just saw something blue in a purse and grabbed them. That's unreasonable because there's no rationale or explanation why you would suspect someone is stealing just by seeing something blue in a purse. In contrast, we can look at the Carr case that we cited, Carr versus HEB, where the plaintiff goes into a store with an unmarked bag. He's got some items in it. No one sees him go in with the bag, and when he tries to leave, the security scanner goes off, recognizes the tag in there. So they stop him. Court says, that's a reasonable belief someone might be stealing because there's no reason for them to have known he had this when he came in, and there's no other evidence that would suggest that they knew there wasn't a problem here. Reasonable belief, because we're looking at what the store thought. Similarly, in Resendez, the Texas Supreme Court case, security guard saw the plaintiff eating from a bag of Walmart marked peanuts, throws the bag away, doesn't pay for it, and stops her as she's leaving the store. Reasonable belief, because again, we're looking at what the reason for the stop was, and is that enough, is that reason sufficient to justify a belief someone's stealing? Another unreasonable example, we have the Saldivar case out of San Antonio, where the plaintiff was suspected of stealing sunglasses, and there was no evidence that the plaintiff was ever near that rack, that the plaintiff, that anyone actually saw her trying on sunglasses, carrying them through. And so when we look at the evidence in this case, the only thing that the plaintiffs even pointed to is a statement from Ms. Hunt saying, there wasn't anything in my purse I didn't pay for. That's it. Nothing to explain why what Mr. Dela Cruz claims he saw was an unreasonable belief that she was stealing or attempting to steal. The next component then is reasonable time. As a matter of law, we know that's present here because we have the video. We can see how long it took. The entire thing took no more than 9 minutes and 44 seconds under the broadest interpretation of what happened. The Texas Supreme Court has said a detention of 10 to 15 minutes, reasonable as a matter of law. So the only thing we're really looking at is whether there was this detention was carried out in a reasonable manner. And from the video, we can see what happened. We can see that it was, and it's not a fact issue at this point, because there's nothing in the record to explain why this wasn't reasonable in the way it was carried out and conducted. Again, nothing even saying what they could have done differently. The only thing the plaintiffs really tried to offer was either irrelevant matters, for example, Ms. Bustos' age, which isn't anything even touching on anything. They offered that evidence to explain Ms. Bustos didn't consent to a detention. Walmart didn't move for summary judgment on consent. We moved on willful detention, and we said, we didn't detain her at all. Her age doesn't matter because she was never stopped one way or the other. Similarly, when we're looking at the evidence, the plaintiff's primary fixation is on policies and procedures, but none of those policies set the standard of care. The breach of any of those policies don't establish liability. Texas Supreme Court made that very clear in the Resendez case when a plaintiff tried to do exactly what Ms. Hunt and Bustos have tried to do, and none of those policies even actually apply to what happened here. For example, they said never pursue a fleeing suspect. There's no evidence anyone was fleeing. They cited a policy about, you know, what you need in order to stop someone. Mr. Dela Cruz's affidavit established all those components. As we laid out in our brief, there's actually no evidence in the record showing any policy violation, even if this court were to presume policies set, established, or the standard of care, or that breaching them created a fact issue. The primary case they tried to cite in their reply was the Garcia versus Walmart case, where they said, well, this court has held that policies always create fact issue. And that's not actually what this court did in Garcia. Garcia involved the question of notice in a premises liability, a slip and fall. It involved a floor scrubber and a plaintiff who claimed she slipped on slippery liquid. The plaintiff offered the video and offered the policy to show that the floor scrubber would create slippery liquid on the floor when it passed, and if it stopped over areas, liquid would pool. The policy said that's what happens from this type of scrubber, and so the court looked at those and said, this is consistent with the notice argument, that is, that you created the substance she slipped on, because your policies say this is exactly what happens. You're using slippery liquid. It puts liquid on the floor if it stops. Fact issue on notice. That's not what we have for this type of case. And this carries over to every cause of action we're dealing with. For example, Ms. Hun's assault claim, basic assault, the video shows no one ever touched her physically to cause her a bodily injury. She didn't offer any evidence that she suffered one. There's no fact issue there. For negligence, they were just simply trying to pass off false imprisonment claim under negligence, and even then, there was no fact issue. This carried over every time, over and over and over. Similarly, when we look at the officer's component of it, there seems to be some confusion on the plaintiff's side as to how that worked. It's a very straightforward inquiry. This is first a distinction because we have a police officer, not just a random security guard. And when we're looking at this, the reason there are public and private duties is because officers have to be able to uphold the law when they're doing this. As the record evidence shows, Officer McNeil responded to a request for assistance because there was an altercation at the front of the store. There's no evidence in the record that he's actually trying to protect Walmart property or even knows this is a shoplifting stop. Even if there was, it doesn't matter. And the illustrative case I think you can look at is the Ogg versus Dillard's case. In that case, the plaintiff tried to return a wallet at a Dillard's store, and when the store associates looked into that, they saw that the credit card that had purchased it had been manually entered. There were other concerns with it. And so they called and got the law enforcement officer who was working as a security guard to look into the issue of whether there was fraud. And so the officer approached and stopped the plaintiff to investigate that issue. Again, in that situation, he's responding to a situation to basically protect assets. And the court said that doesn't matter. If he's looking into a crime, if he has reasonable suspicion there might be a crime, if he sees a crime, he's got his public hat on. In this case, it's even clearer that he's performing public duties because when he approaches, he sees Ms. Bustos attacking Mr. Rock. The video shows within a 2-second period, she's throwing a punch at Mr. Rock, she's kicking at him, and the officer is walking right up from the bottom. Both Ms. Hunt and Ms. Bustos admit that's exactly what was happening when the officer approached. And so when he's responding, that public hat is on. And this isn't a quote, immunity case like the plaintiff such to suggest. It's a vicarious liability respondent superior situation, and that's why it matters. Because they want to sue Walmart for what the officer did. There's nothing that said they couldn't sue Officer McNeil if they chose to, but they didn't. They wanted to sue Walmart. That's why the difference matters. So in this situation, we can basically carve out the officer. Walmart should not be responsible for him. And so the only question then is Walmart have any fact issue for what Mr. Rock or Mr. Dela Cruz did? I think the video, again, is very clear that when we see what is actually happening and the evidence the plaintiffs try to offer, there is no way you can view that video and find any fact issue with what the evidence in the record is from the plaintiff's side. From the standpoint of Ms. Bustos, the video clearly shows no one from Walmart did anything to her. They didn't detain her. They didn't touch her. They didn't say anything to her because she admits that in her deposition. They didn't interact with her in any way, really, until she started grabbing Mr. Rock. Frankly, it's almost amazing Mr. Rock didn't respond to Ms. Bustos' attacks against him. I mean, that's a level of restraint I don't know if many of us would be able to do. But from the summary judgment standpoint, we can look at that video and say, Ms. Bustos, your allegations, no rational, reasonable juror could believe you, even ignoring the fact you didn't offer any evidence to explain why there's a fact issue. And the same holds true with Ms. Hunt. You know, the only component Walmart didn't offer the video for is a reasonable belief of shoplifting, but that's not something we need the video to do. That looks at Mr. Dela Cruz's evidence and examines that, and they didn't offer anything to dispute it. So from that standpoint, This is a very straightforward application of Scott v. Harris, much like this court did in, I believe it was the Granados case with Walmart and the McDowell case with Walmart, where it applied Scott v. Harris to these type of issues, not false imprisonment, but to issues of liability elements in civil actions. And in that context, we can even look at the officer video towards the end, where we can actually see them pulling items out of her purse when she's already offered evidence that she didn't have anything in there except a single pair of jeans. I mean, this case is one that strains credibility of anyone who looks at it to understand why on earth the plaintiffs chose to file this lawsuit other than, you know, the monetary implications of it. You attack a law enforcement officer and then sue Walmart because the officer defends himself. I think the record's very clear on that. The same holds true with the 12B6. There was no evidence whatsoever or pleading whatsoever that they were consumers, that there was any unconscionable action, laundry list violations, anything like that. So for these reasons, Your Honor, we ask this court to affirm the district court's summary judgment ruling and its 12B6 ruling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
You have only 5 minutes on the button.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you.
Want to unmask?
I'm so sorry. I apologize. Your Honor, a couple of issues that I'd like to address. Lastly, they finished with credibility because their assessment of the case overall. That's our point. Credibility determinations from Anderson all the way down, credibility determinations are not to be made at Rule 56 pursuit and the posture of the case. The subjective aspect of the case really, of the shopkeeper's privilege really sticks out to me. Your Honor, we are applying the Texas legislature's statute, 124.01, the shopkeeper's privilege. I don't mean to be flippant, but if they have an issue with that statute, Austin is the place to go to change it to subjective. It doesn't say subjective. It says reasonable. If it was just subjective, then why have we had all these cases filling up the court reporters with cases after cases, including, for example, Grant versus Shop and Go from the Houston Court of Appeals, Dillard's versus Silva from the Supreme Court, 2004. If it's all subjective, then a first-day employee at Walmart or Target or any other store could say, I saw Johnny steal. I saw Johnny kick that old man down the aisle, and they get off scot-free. It defies the law and common sense to say it is subjective. All the circumstances of the case and the record must be considered. And in this case, the record is scant. There's no video, there's suspicious things missing, inconsistencies. The Grant case versus Shop and Go really hones in on that. Those inconsistencies are important to the determination. The purse issue, Judge Wilson, it's right on point. I didn't understand that. Was that waiver by not citing the right case law? We addressed that in our summary judgment record. And
did you raise and argue the offensiveness of that conduct or contact?
Yes, Your Honor.
For the district court?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the magistrate addresses it that we talk. Are you asking about the purse?
I'm asking about the purse.
Yes, Your Honor. That fundamentally, that's our case. We agree that he grabbed the purse. Dela Cruz testified that it's...
But that he grabbed the purse, but that the conduct would be such that it would be offensive so that it goes out of the shopkeeper's privilege. I'm talking maybe about Gordon, the Gordon case. I had heard counsel opposite to say that the plaintiffs didn't raise that below, didn't make that argument.
I think, Your Honor, that's a factual... That is an incorrect statement. I think they as you heard about the Odom case, I think they believe waiver is the argument to make on every issue because we didn't cite waiver, and I'm not even sure we didn't cite it. But the point is, in response to your question, yes, we made those arguments, and I think they're right on point about the purse and the manner of the offense. The last thing I want to bring up, unless the court has questions, we have never, I keep hearing this, that we have somehow questioned the video. We said it in the district court. We have said it in our briefs here. We are fine with the video and that we have never objected to the video. We have never said it doesn't represent true facts that are represented on the video, Your Honor. But this case is more subtle than just what you see on the video. And Judge Wilson, the purse issue is right on point. That you see him grabbing her and pulling her, and then you have testimony from Dela Cruz that he's a big man, she's small, and he pulls her, and you have testimony from Ms. Hinn that she was scared. You have testimony from Ms. Bustos that she was scared. Those are fact issues that must be resolved in our favor. Why this case goes to trial or why the plaintiffs took that case, I'm not here to argue about that. The argument is Rule 56 should be applied, and it wasn't applied properly in this case. Unless the court has any questions, I am done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.